So thanks for coming. My name's Ray Davis. This is putting Madcap Flare in the driver's seat with data-driven images. A little housekeeping up front. This is going to be a demo-intensive presentation, and I'm going to be jumping around a lot between the PowerPoint presentation here, Flare, Photoshop, even Notepad, and some Windows directories. If you're watching the presentation after the conference and listening to the audio, as I move from application to application, I've put extra slides in the presentation that list the files that I'm looking at. Try to make it a little bit easier for you to follow along after the fact. Also for reference, I'm going to be demoing this in Adobe Photoshop CS4. The functionality that we are looking at today, though, I've seen as far back as Photoshop 7, and it is in the current release Creative Cloud as well. So it should work with just about anything that you have, unless you're way back in the past with Photoshop. You're going to be seeing Madcap Flare 2018. We'll talk a little bit about 2019 at the very end. I'll give you a spoiler alert. It does work in 2019. So if you're on 2019 and you're worried about compatibility, you don't have to get up and leave. It does work in 2019. All right, so what I'm going to be talking about today is coupling a tech writer's, or at least this tech writer's, two favorite tools for doing technical writing. And that's Madcap Flare, of course, and Adobe Photoshop. And we're going to be doing something that Adobe calls a data-driven image. So in a nutshell, Photoshop images are composed of layers. You probably already know this. There's text layers, there's pixel layers, the images, there's adjustment layers, and masking layers. And you, of course, in the layers palette, you can exercise some control over this, but you can also exercise some control over these layers in a very programmatic way, and that's what we're going to be talking about. You can alter the text. So you can change what the text says, you can alter the pixels, so you can change those images, and you can turn layers on and off. We're going to be doing this using some functionality under the images menu for variables. You can control these layers either through the variables dialog box or with a specially formatted tab-delimited text file. And that's what we're going to be talking about the majority of the time today. So why would you do something like this? Why wouldn't you just control your images with your through the normal interface? To answer that, I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I love movies, especially movies of the late 80s and the early 90s. When I was in college around that time, I worked as a projectionist in a movie theater, so I got to see a ton of movies. And so I really started to get into movies and love movies at that point. And I like movies so much that my wife and I, we built a home theater in our basement. It's nothing fancy, just like a big TV with big speakers and that sort of thing. But it's something that we really enjoy. And occasionally we have friends over. And we have friends over to watch movies, dinner and a movie, that sort of thing. And I thought it would be fun to create a movie ticket for those nights as a takeaway for our friends to remember the night by. So this is an example of the movie ticket that I put together. And like a good technical writer who understands topic-based authoring, I wanted this to be very reusable. And like a good designer, I completely over-engineered it. So what you see here is pretty static. So the name of the theater up there at the top, some of the beauty lines, the borders and whatnot are all static. The background color, the audio encodings, those don't change very much. But what does change is the date and time, because this is basically an invitation. The movie information, they're on the right, so you have the name of the movie, the rating, the runtime, that sort of thing. And of course the one sheet, or the poster, we call it a one sheet. Spoiler. Okay. So let's go over to Photoshop and let's actually look at this ticket template. Full disclosure, when I was in all the weeks that I've been rehearsing this, I never put the screen behind me. So this is going through it new for the first time, so this should be interesting. Over here in the layers palette, you can see the different layers that we were just talking about. We have the time down here in this layer, the date. Over here we have title, and that should turn the information on the right side off, on and off, and of course the one sheet there in the middle. And this right now, it's all very generic. It's just placeholder information. So if I want to change this information, oh boy, that's way over there, isn't it? I'm guessing. No. There we go. Oh boy. It's way over here. So this is where we define those different layers as variables. This is going to go really slow, y'all. I'm really sorry. So we have different layers and we have different functionality. And you can see here we're giving the layer a variable name and then some sort of functionality. So this one looks to be a text replacement. And you can turn the visibility on and off. That's way over there. Man, this is going to be really difficult. I apologize for this. Like I said, this is kind of new territory for me at this very moment. Okay, so we have the different layers that are defined. You can see the list of layers, and everything that has an asterisk by it is a layer that has a variable associated with it. And that variable allows you to control different aspects of that layer. So if it's a text layer, you can control what the text says. If it's a image layer, you can control what that image is. If it's an adjustment layer, all of those layers you can turn on and off. Okay. The layer, so this is sort of an adjunct to the layers palette. It's reading the layer names from the palette, from part of the PSD, but you're assigning variable names to each one of those layers. If you think about it, I might have a dozen different layers that are called date or time in my palette. And what this does is it allows me to assign a specific variable name to that individual layer, so I can control that individual layer regardless of what it's called in the palette. So let's take a quick look at one of these files. Let's do this first. So this is where we actually control some of this information. Like I said, we can control the information through this dialog box, or we can control it through the through a text file. So here, if I just control, I'm just going to enter some random information there, and I should be able to apply that. And you can see how the information on the right side changes where I've entered this into the dialog box. So I can control the information in the layer there, or I can do it with, like I said, a specially formatted text file. And this is what that looks like. So in the first row, we have all those variables that we defined in our variable definitions. And then in the next row after that, we have values for those variables. This is like a hashtag or like a hash table, if you're familiar at all with programming. You have your variables, and this is all tab delimited, like a good tab delimited file. It's difficult to read because sometimes the tabs are just a single space. So it can be difficult to see where those spaces are. But trust me, between there's four variables, and then there's four values for each of those variables. Let's see. In Photoshop, I'll show you how this functionality actually works. If you hit the import file or import button, and then it brings up just a file picker. And I'm going to load this first one. And so it's reading that information out of that text file, and it's replacing the text you see down there at the bottom. Now we have an actual date and an actual time. We have actual information about the movie on the right side, and then the one sheet has been changed as well. So this is really neat. And it's clean. It keeps you from touching the things that you don't want to change. It allows you to very efficiently change the things that you do want to change. And it's also complete overkill, right? Because I'm going through all these multiple clicks to change text, or I'm going through all these multiple clicks to just change the movie one sheet. And so why would I do something like this? This seems like a lot of overkill. So instead of just watching one movie, let's do a movie marathon. So we're going to have a Jane Austen movie marathon. So we're going to start with Sense and Sensibility at 12 o'clock, and then at 3 o'clock, we're going to watch Pride and Prejudice. At 6 o'clock, we're going to watch this semi-biographical movie called Becoming Jane, and then we're going to finish up at 9 o'clock with the beloved classic Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So you can see now we have all of those images in a single template, and we can use Photoshop to kick all of these images out to JPEG or PSD. The different data sets can become different individual images. But it's everything in a single file. So you can start to see that there's some efficiency of scale there. If we look at this file, it's the same thing. Across the top, we have those variable names, and then each row is a data set. So we have Sense and Sensibility and all the information that goes along with it. And then we have Pride and Prejudice and all the information that goes along with that. Each time you hit that button in Photoshop, it goes to the next data set, and it just refreshes that file. So this is a really neat idea in Photoshop, and it allows you to do a lot of stuff really quickly, but this text file, it has to be very, very, very precisely formatted. If it's not exactly formatted, if you have too many tabs or too many spaces or not enough information, the whole thing just falls apart. And it can be really, really, really frustrating. So what we need is a way to generate a lot of very consistently formatted information. So what do we have as tech writers that's very good at generating a lot of very consistently formatted information? Why are we all here today? Matt Kepler, of course. So this is the topic for the movie marathon. It's just a single topic. And you can see across the top we have those variable names, and then in each row, each succeeding row, is a different movie. Just a couple of points of interest here. The movie poster there, the one sheet, is actually present inside the images directory. This is a direct link over to content. This isn't like in Photoshop or in Word, like we were talking about earlier, where you might paste in something and now you've got a bitmap and you've got to remember to save it. You want to have this information in your content, so you're creating a direct link to your content. And I'll show you why that's important in just a minute. And then the other thing is that this is just HTML. There's no data validation here. There's no way here in the third column to say, this is going to be time, and if it's not formatted correctly, then to reject the information. That can say 12 o'clock p.m. That can say 1400 for military or European time. It can say banana. And Photoshop doesn't care as long as it's a piece of information that it can do something with. So when you're putting this information in there, you want to make sure that it's the exact information that you want to put in there. But we're kind of limited here in a topic. So the topic has everything that you want, and so your TOC is just going to be this topic, right? And that doesn't give you a lot of flexibility. It doesn't give you a lot of data reuse. So let's look at an individual topic. Here we have an individual topic that has a movie in it. And what you start to get into here is this allows you to build up an inventory of movies. And as you want to watch a movie marathon, then you start picking the individual movies and doing minor information edits within the topic and your TOC. Minor pause while I try to read the gigantic screen that's directly in front of me. This is just not going to work. I'm sorry, y'all. I think I'm just sitting too close to the screen. So let's do this. This is also going to be the most amateur presentation you see all week. Okay, so this is a good example of a TOC where we have different movies that we've put in here. This is going to be pretty cool because this allows you, like I said, to create an inventory of these different movies and put them all together in a TOC. And it's now we're starting to reuse this data. So if you want to change the order of these movies, you're not changing a topic. You're doing what you always do with topic-based authoring. You're just moving these topics around here inside the TOC. So it becomes very topic-based authoring-ish. So to build this, that was our TOC. And so to kick this out, we're going to see. So what do I want to just do away with the notes? It seems to be more trouble than they're worth right now. Of course, we're going to set up our TOC, and we have our build events. So we're going to need a build event. So that's there. And we want, you saw that original text file. It's a single text file. And what we want is to get all those multiple topics into a single text file. That's going to be tough because in 2018, the way we were doing it was we were doing XML book. I made the fatal programming error of using legacy functionality. If you've looked at 2019, you know that XML book is no longer present. So we had to come up with a new way of doing that pretty quickly. So we're going to choose clean XML. This is it's going to be the cleanest way of generating code that we can work with. All right, so but it's still going to generate multiple files. You're going to take all of your content, and it's going to be a one-to-one relationship. You're going to start with one topic, and you're going to end up with one output file. You're going to start with five topics, and you're going to end up with five output files. So how are we going to combine all of that into a single file? So let's come back over here. We're going to use a build event. So Flare is really great at formatted output. We know this. We know PDF, FrameMaker up until 2018, Word, XML, and HTML, even Ditta. It's really good at that formatted output. And what it's not yet great at is unformatted text, so the straight text, tab delimited, comma delimited, that sort of thing. that's what we need. So how do we get that? We're going to use a build event. So 1 minute introduction to build events. It invokes an external process. It's almost always a DOS command. It needs to be something that's executable from the command line. And we're going to use an extensible style sheet transformer, or XSLT. So what is XSL and XML? You might have heard that. If you're not familiar with that, XSL transforms information. So you can feed XSL and XML into a transformer. You put in XML, you get out XML. You put in text, you can get out XML. You put in XML, you can get out text. That last thing is what we're doing. Important to note, HTML is just a flavor of XML. So, or XHTML especially is a very specific flavor of XML. So that's what we're going to be using. Where are we going to get that that XML? I'll come back to this in just a minute. XML and Flare, almost all the data in XML and Flare is held in XML. So your content, of course, is HTML, or if we're going to kick out as XHTML. Your variables files are they are XML. Your TOCs are XML. Your targets, XML. So we can read any of these with our XSL and gather information out to do something with that. Your XSLT, you want something that is 2.0 capable. There's three different kinds of XSLT out there. There's 1.0, which is, I don't want to say it's useless, but it is not useful for what we're doing here. You need some of the advanced functionality in 2.0. And there's a 3.0 that's not well adopted yet. It's out there, but there's not a lot of people that are using it, and there's not a lot of additional functionality beyond what we need here. 2.0 is kind of the sweet spot. Some examples of that are Apache Xalen, Saxon. I'm using one called Altova XML. I've been using it for years, and it will be included in your in the download if you download this presentation. Okay, so this is all really neat, and the movie ticket thing is kind of interesting, but in all my years as a technical writer, I've never been asked to create a movie ticket for work. So let's do something more interesting with it. So I'm going to come back over here to Photoshop. My department writes service and repair instructions for big hospital systems, so x-ray systems, navigated surgery, that sort of thing. And we're making our first foray into translated documents. And the business is going very slowly. They don't understand that it takes money to do translations. So they want to do what we're calling IKEA-style instructions, where we have very heavy graphics, very little language, really just admonitions that need to be translated. And we have these CAD models that we are pulling out, and we're putting the arrows on them that show you how to take the covers off and how to pull the screws out and that sort of thing. And we want to create these numbered images. And so these numbered images, we need to create a lot of them in a very short amount of time. So we created this template, and it's very straightforward. It just has a white background and then an image layer, which is right now empty, and then this square outline, and then a text layer, which right now is just that that number sign. And here you can see the different layers that have been assigned as variables. So the image is a pixel replacement, and then the only other variable is the number or the integer, and that's going to be a text replacement. So let's come over here to Flare. Oh, I made everything so small, didn't I? I'm on completely the wrong side of the building for this. So in this example, we have this little wooden puzzle box. It's called a Soma Cube. And we use this for some of our prototyping because it's sort of, it's a puzzle. And it takes specific things to take it apart and put it back together again. And we use this as an analog for our medical device. So we have a couple of different topics here where we just have an image and we have a caption. And so the image shows us how we're going to take this particular part off. And then the caption is just an individual, there's just small notes to us that tell us what's going on in the image. And so we can use this information to create some documentation. We can use it to create that numbered list. So let's load CubeAssembly. So here's our TOC. We have all these assembly instructions, and what it does is it starts with the system completely apart, and it shows us how to start putting the system back together again. Let's see. So if we build this, I'm going to build auto number images here. Our TOC is we have, we're going to do clean XHTML, and we're going to do this CubeAssembly TOC. And if I build this, real quickly, I end up with, in my output, this is our DDI file. We've dumped all of those captions, and now we just have integers from 1 to 6. And you can also see that we also have this very long path to our image. It's an absolute path to that image, and it's in our output as well. So what we can do is we can put this DDI file out anywhere on our machine. We can store it in outside of our sandbox. We can store it. We might even be able to store it on the network file. And when we put this into Photoshop, because it's an absolute file or it's an absolute path, we can access that output content anywhere. So what happens when we do that? What happens when we pull that file in here? We get each of our files, we get each of our images, and we get that number. And this is disassembly, so step 2 is to pull that up, step 3 is to take those parts off, step 4, etc., until we've completely disassembled the system. So from a data reusability perspective, I have a different TOC here. I think I did assembly. So I have a different TOC. I take those same topics and I reverse the order. I'm going really slowly because I'm having to step all the way over here every time. So I'm not going to rebuild this. But what I can do is I can take that information, that exact same information, I put it in the reverse order in different TOC, I rebuild it, and I've reused my entire disassembly process to demonstrate assembly, and it has the different numbers showing now. This is step 1, and it's just the single piece in step 2, and it shows how all those things go together. It's a way to reuse information that is not necessarily what you'd expect. So that brings us to well into our presentation, what I consider to be the thesis statement of this, and that is to not think about this as a way of creating an image, but to think about this as a way to reuse content. Instead of outputting to HTML5 or Word or some other format, you're outputting to Photoshop. You're just generating a new output vector for how you can use this content. So I want to take a quick look at the XSL that is doing the work in the background and kind of give you an idea of what's going on with that. So this part of the demo is not necessarily intended to teach you XSL. There's a lot of resources out there that can help you learn XSL. It's not terribly difficult, but it is very precise in the way that you need to use the information. But it's natural language programming. So it's very easy, it's very straightforward once you sort of get the hang of it. Up there at the top, we're just going to include some global variables. So those variables are things like the output path, which is going to allow us to generate that absolute URL to the text. One of the things we need to know is what's the name of the target. So I can go and get some different information out of the target. That's actually an XML file that's not part of the output, but I want to read that so that I know where to get specific pieces of information. Template match file list. You can see here where we're starting to create the actual file. So I'm doing a result document. I'm using the output path that I've read into the file, and I'm creating a file called DDI text. It's always DDI text unless I want to change what's going on there. But I'm generating an actual output file called DDI text. And then inside it, I'm going to get the headers. So what happens when I get the headers? I come down here to this function down here at the little further down. And so I'm looking in the output for a file. I've unintuitively called the file full path. But in that file, I'm looking for the HTML node. I'm looking for the body node, table, table header, table row, table header. And then for each child of table head, which is a TD, I'm getting the value of that cell. And then I ask the file, is the position for this TD last? If the answer is yes, I give myself a carriage return. If the answer is no, I give myself a tab. And it all sort of runs together. So that's the header. And then getting rows is very similar. Again, I'm looking in each file individually at the HTML node, body, table body, table row, table data. I ask for the information that's in that cell, and I put that at the next row or at the next line in the DDI.txt. If it's the last cell in that table, I give a carriage return. If it's not, I give a tab. And so I'm creating this tab delimited file. And every time I finish a row, I do a carriage return, and it gives me the next file, and I just repeat that. This goes very quickly, mostly because this is just very straightforward information. This happens almost instantaneously in the background. What do we look like on time? We're doing pretty good on the time. So, like I said, this is not terribly difficult, but you need to think about it. You need to think about your information sort of holistically. Where is my information located? How do I get to it? How do I read it into another file? It's not too difficult. There's a lot of resources out there. I'm self-taught, so if I can do it, I know that you can do it. It's very straightforward. So let's look at another example here. So we're back here with this. And remember in Flare we had these topics. So these topics, they show us what is going on. We're taking these parts off of the system, and then in the captions we have just these notes to ourselves as to what it is that we're seeing in this image. It's just a note to the writer that what's happening. We decide somewhere along the way that we want to start using this information. In our last build event, we took that caption and we just threw it away and we replaced it with a number. So what if we want to use that caption? So let's go. We have a build event here. Actually, we're going to use... We have this target. This target, again, is clean XHTML. We're going to do the assembly TOC, so we're going to show how to put this system together, and we're going to use a different build event this time. Instead of throwing that caption away, we're going to actually use that caption. So let's do that build. Let's not double tap it. This is really handy here. If you have a warning, it didn't work. And it's not going to generate that DDI. You usually come across this during development. If you see a warning there, you're going to need to dig into your XSL a little bit. What we found is that once we get this working, it's actually very, I don't want to say foolproof, but it's very robust. As long as you're following the right rules in your topics, you're not going to have any problems with your build. So now we have a new template here, and so you should be getting pretty good at seeing what layers we're going to assign as variables. So we have the image, and we have the caption, and that's all that's in this template. So now those captions are being displayed here on our image. So we're taking that same image, and we're putting that in our template, and then we have the caption text. What's interesting here is we didn't actually change the topic. We're using the same topic that we used with the numbered images. So those numbered images, we just threw away the caption and we put in a number. Here, we're using the same topic. We're actually, I think, using the same TOC. We're just using a different target because we want a different build event, and we're getting something completely different just by changing the build event. Why would we want to do something like this? One of the sort of interesting ideas that I came up with for something like this would be if you wanted a quick start guide. So the numbered images you might use as a quick start guide to say this is how you do something very quickly in those big, large, gross steps that that you might see 1 through 6, how to put something together or how to take something apart. This might be more user guide oriented, where you could send this out for localization and you could generate all these different localized images with the text that's directly on there. Maybe not the best use of your time, maybe not the best use of this, but I think that this is an interesting approach that might allow a little bit more flexibility in some of the things that you might want to do in terms of generating these images. All right, so let's do another one. Let's do Does anyone have any questions? I feel really disjointed up here. I really feel off my game because I'm off the podium. I can't see anything. Let's take a moment. Does anyone have any questions about this? Yeah, go ahead. So the question is, when you're creating the template, are you doing anything special to set it up to make it variableizable? And the answer to that is no. Usually what I do in something like this is I just do page design, really. Like when I was doing the movie ticket, it's just page design. And it was after the fact that I did the variables. When you're doing something like this, I guess one of the things to consider is you want to have fewer layers because those layers, you're not going to be controlling them manually. You're going to be controlling them programmatically. And the more layers you have, we'll see an example of this, the more layers you have and the more you want to turn on and off or replace or something like that, the bigger your topics have to be, the more complex your topics have to be, and the more complex your image is. So maybe that's the answer. Just think about how many things you want to control and try to limit yourself to what that looks like in your on your template.
And then you replace your first image,
which is your image, your picture. Do you link it or embed it? It is linked. So here, yeah. In this, you can see that's the beginning of that absolute link that goes out. So when we're working with these, we can take these DDI files and we can put them anywhere we want on our computer. And because it's a relative, because it's an absolute link, it knows exactly where to go anywhere on your system to get that image. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead. Okay, good question. So we're still in our variables dialog box, and this is a dialog box with two presentations. The second one is where you change the data. The first one is where you set up the different layers. In this drop-down, you can see all the layers that are present in this image, and you just choose one that you want to change. So in this case, this is the caption layer. And you tell it, I want this caption layer to be text replacement, and I want that variable to be called captions. If it's an image, it'll be image replacement, and you can call it whatever you want in terms of what the variable is. And then on all of these layers, you can turn them on and off. Okay? Anyone else before we move on? So let's look at something that we have considered using this for in our own work, and that's inventory. Not inventory control, but just in terms of inventory for our parts. So I mentioned earlier that we write procedures for servicing and repairing these hospital systems. And in our manuals, we have a list of we call it a field replaceable unit list or a FRU list, and it lists all the parts that someone might be able to replace on a system. And then when we give a procedure, we give the required parts there at the beginning of the procedure. So if you're going to replace a battery, here's the battery you need, here's the cable you need, that sort of thing. So as they go into the procedure, they know what it is that they need to, what it is they need to actually perform the procedure. So over in FLAIR, we have so here's an example of a topic that is a piece of inventory. You have the image of the part, you have the part number, you have a description of it, and you have the cost of that part. And we have a number of these for our sort of hypothetical device here. And so we want to put that into this template. Inventory, okay, there it is. So here's our TOC for the parts catalog, or the parts chapter in our service manual. And it's just a list of these different topics, and they're going to go all together. Let's use this information. You saw the topic for that part. Let's use this information to drive our data-driven images. Is that inventory down there? Yep. Okay. So our TOC, again, we're going to do clean XHTML. Our TOC is the cube inventory, and then we have another build event that we're going to use here. And this one is text only. Okay? So when we build this, and I pull this into this into our DDI. So now as we run through this, we have all of our parts. It's the name of the part, it's the part number, and it's the price. So this is pretty cool. Now we're starting to really reuse this content. We can put this, like I said, in the list of all the parts that are available for someone to replace. We can also put this over in our parts replacement procedure. We can use the data, we can use the topic in the parts replacement procedure. We can use that topic to drive what this looks like in the list of replaceable parts. Some interesting uses that you might consider here would be you could put additional information in your topic for the audience. So you might have an internal resource who can order all parts. And they might have a manual where it brings in all of those parts into your list with the internal price. You might give this manual to a customer as well. You could read your topic and determine what to build based on an attribute that says customer or internal, that sort of thing, and only build customer-facing parts. And if you come to the workshops tomorrow, I'll show you a really nifty way to change the price on the fly as well, if you wanted to have customer pricing for something. You might have a business unit, B2B pricing that you want to change for this, and you might have a limited number of parts that are available for B2B. Or another good example would be, I just had it in my head, it'll come back to me. Nope, it's gone. All right, so so this is a neat way. Again, we're reusing that content. You have those topics, and you can use those topics anywhere, and now you can use them to drive something in Photoshop. So kind of neat. All right, so we have just a couple minutes left. We've got about 20 minutes left through the end of the session. There's one more that I want to show you. It brings all of this stuff together. So let's look at that. So let me cancel out of that. All right, so this is a topic. Up here at the top, we have caption and image. These are our variable names in our image. We should be starting to get very familiar with what's in those headings. We have some kind of neat cars here on the right. And on the left, we have some information about those cars. We have the make, the model, and the year. And so we have multiple pieces of content here. So instead of showing you the individual pieces of content, let's look at our TOC. So we have Porsche coupes, we have Porsche SUVs, we have BMW. I like the BMW one because this one looks a lot like my car. So this one, I'm kind of partial to this one. What else do we have here? We have, where are we at? Yep, we've got Audis. Yep. So our TOC is just all of those topics stacked up together. And our build, or our target, again, clean XHTML. We have the TOC name. And this we're going to call a build event called thumbnail. So you'll see why it's called thumbnail. I think it was Neil yesterday showed some neat functionality here in Flare to do thumbnail images in your documentation. And so this doesn't have anything to do with that. This is a different way to do a thumbnail. It's kind of neat. It's, I think, a little more robust than what Neil was showing, but it is not, you're not going to be able to use it in the same way that Neil was showing it. So let's go ahead and build this. And while that's building, I'm going to come over here. And now we have this template. This one's a little bit more sophisticated. There's a little bit more going on in here. So we've got the background, which is currently turned off. We have the caption down here in the bottom right corner. We have the masking top and bottom, the image, which is just where the image is going to go. And then we have these other things called thumbnail, and we have another layer up here called desaturation. So if we look at this, if we look at the different variables, this one actually does have quite a few variables in it. And when we look at the DDI, the text file, I'll show you why having a lot of variables starts to get really complicated if you're trying to do this by hand, taking the approach that we're using with Flare, where we're using the topics, it can be a little less complicated, but I really challenged myself here, and I'll show you why when we look at the data. So let me go ahead and pull in that DDI file. This one takes just a little bit longer to load because there's a little bit more information in it. There we go. And so the image has been replaced, the caption has been replaced, you've still got the masking. And as we scroll through our data sets, something interesting happens. The next data set down, the masking turns off, the caption turns off. The image gets shrunk down to that little thumbnail, and it turns black and white. That's what the desaturation layer does. That's an adjustment layer. We were talking earlier about the different kinds of layers in Photoshop. This is an adjustment layer. It takes all the color out of the image. As we scroll through our data sets, the next one down is big image, full color with the caption, and then after that, thumbnail. And it just repeats. I'll leave you with that one. So let's look at what's happening with that file. So previously, we were just going through each topic and we were taking the caption and we were taking the link to the image. But there's a lot more that we want to do with this file. We want to turn layers on and off. And we want to do more than one image with each layer. So the way the XSL works is the first time it goes through the data, we set the caption there. So you see caption and then image. And like any good tab delimited file, nothing lines up after that point. Desaturation visibility, you'll see that is that turns on and off. Your true, your false. This is where those layer visibilities are starting to be controlled. True is on, false is off. And then the next layer down is that thumbnail version where we turn off the caption. And then we still have that image. And as we go across, you'd see that the caption visibility not only says none, but it's turned off. Desaturation is turned on. Masking visibility is turned off. I'm inferring that information from what to generate this functionality. I went into this saying, okay, I want to have this big image that has the caption and all the masking, but I also want to generate that thumbnail. So I have in my head what that functionality looks like, and now I'm inferring what values I need for these variables as I go through that information. If you remember the topic, it was just caption and image. So we're generating a ton of information here instead of just relying on what's in the topic. So this really, really demonstrates how you have to have your Flare topics, your Photoshop, PSD, and all of its layers, and your build event, they all need to work together. But when you can make them work together, it actually works in a pretty nifty way. So let's come back over to PowerPoint. So troubleshooting, we'll go through this really quickly. Troubleshooting, there's three kinds of errors that you can expect, and they're mostly around pairing your variables and your values. So you either have too many variables and not enough values, so you have a variable without a value. You have a value without a variable, the opposite. You might have, a long time ago, what we might refer to as a syntax error. So if you have the wrong type, if you have a you're trying to do a pixel replacement, if you're trying to put pixels into a text layer or text into a pixel layer, that's going to throw an error. A value, this is an important one, the value cannot be null. So every variable must have a value. Remember on that last DDI where I was turning the caption off, I can't just say that the value is null. I put in none. I put in the word none. So that caption now reads none, but I've turned it off. And so that's a demonstration of how each variable must have a value, even if it's not going to display. The other kind of error that you might run into is color management. Color management, if anyone's ever done any work in Photoshop, they know that color management is one of those things that you will bang your head against for a 300-page book, and there are huge books that have been written about color management in Photoshop, and that's it. And you will come away just as confused as you ever were. In Photoshop, up there in the top tab for this image, you'll see that you have the name of the template, you have the zoom level. So here it's 33%. You have the selected layer, you have the color space. So this is RGB, and then there at the very end, almost all the way out to the very end out here, there's a pound sign. And what the pound sign means is that this document, this PSD, is not color managed. If you try to bring a color managed image as a text or as a pixel replacement into a non-color managed image, like you have here, it will bomb. It fails reliably, and it fails completely. It will just shut down Photoshop. So do yourself a favor, just turn on color management. sRGB is a great kind of all-purpose color color space for this, and you'll be fine. But if you see that pound sign up there, you're headed for trouble. Okay, so what's not going to work here? I think we adequately demonstrated that this is not practical if you only have one or two images that you need to produce. You're going to spend more time setting all this stuff up than you are going to save yourself doing all of this programming. There's no text formatting, so the only formatting that's available to you is the text layer in Photoshop. So you can do some pretty interesting things with that. You can do, you know, bold, italic, small caps, underline, that sort of thing. But it's all things that are available in Photoshop, and it's only for that text layer. There's no character level formatting. All the formatting in Flare is dumped. You saw that in the text file. It's just text. There's no open bold, close bold, or open italic, and there's no line breaks. If you put a line break in, it's going to dump that. If it doesn't dump that, there's going to be a problem. What works really well? Content reuse. That's super cool, right? And we're using it in a way that is unexpected. We're using it not in different topics and different TOCs and different targets. We're using it in a different application and one that you don't normally expect it in. We're using it in Photoshop, which I think is really neat. There's an economy of scale here. Once you get this set up, it works really well. That project that I was telling you about where we were doing where we were trying to do translation, once we get this set up and you get your topic set up, we were cranking out 200 images in an hour. It's so easy to do. One of the changes that was requested as we were doing our testing was the arrows weren't dark enough. So instead of going back and redoing all of those images, we just put an adjustment layer in our template, and then we ran all those DDI files through, and we regenerated, you know, our PMs were expecting this to take a week, and we came back in an hour, and we had all of these files that were completely regenerated. I think about 210 files is what we ended up generating. This is very good because you get a very standardized look. The sizes are always the same because it's a consistent template. The look and feel is always consistent because it's the same template. And like I've been alluding to or flat out stating, is that the images can be located anywhere. You can put that DDI anywhere and it goes to the project. If you want to bring something into the project, you can reference it from outside the project. So that's pretty cool. How do I get started? So if you download this presentation, you have all the MadCap Flare projects that I've been working with here. So all the topics, all the targets, all the build events. You'll be looking at the screen, so you'll have a lot easier time with it than I'm having right now. All the Photoshop templates with all the variables already set up. And there's a number of README files in there that tell you how to set up the transformer. There is a little bit of configuration that's required, the README file tells you how to go through that. And there's also a README in there that tells you which project goes with which Photoshop template. If you put the wrong Photoshop template together with the wrong DDI, it's going to look weird. It might even fail because you might not have the right variables set up. So it helps you make sure that you're using the right ones. And then the transformer. So Saxon and Zeylin, they can be kind of expensive. This one's free. I warn you, though, that it is an executable. So if you have any sort of IT restrictions about putting an executable file on your system, be forewarned, this is an executable. I've been using it for years in three different companies. I've never had a problem with it. It's lightweight. It's reliable. For the most part, I've never seen it fail. It's bulletproof as far as I'm concerned, and it does everything you need it to do. And then the last thing, we talked a little bit about compatibility. I started building these in 2017, updated to 2018, and then just prior to this conference, they updated to 2019. It works in all of them. I've re-engineered the background so that it works in 2019. Unless you're using, I think that build events were not available in 2016 or just before 2016, so obviously it's not going to work if you're not doing build events or if you're not able to use a build event. But up to and including 2019, it does function. Again, I apologize for this. I did not consider being on the backside of the screen and not being able to see it. I know this was really clunky. I apologize for that. I hope this was cool. I hope this gives you some ideas about how you might want to use this. What questions do you have for me, if at all? Please. Yep. So the question was the output of this build event. You don't use it for anything. It's a byproduct to use in Photoshop, and that's absolutely correct. This is like a it's a worker file. It's an adjunct process to what you might be generating the rest of your content with. Okay, let's have a quick look at that. So in the build event, build event workshop tomorrow, I'll go into great detail on this, but the build event, line one, it always consists of two lines. Line one is a change directory to the location of your build event script, and then line two is the actual build event itself. So in this case, the actual build event itself is called index_thumbnail.bat, and then I pass it a number of variables. And so that's how you bring about that build event. Anyone else? I am really excited about build events. If you are too, come find me. I love talking about this stuff. So thank you.